Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to our first Platinum Coaching Call for January 2019. First call. It's great to be here with you guys. And I have Susan also in the call, which I'll be introducing here in a few minutes. I want to give everyone a chance who's going to be attending today to join us. I'm going to jump in to right away to a question that we got from Kelly. And then, like I said, we'll bring Susan in. And we'll open it up for a live Q&A. This is an interesting question that comes up often, and it's related to trade shows, conferences, and so forth. And I see Robin's on the line. I know she's an expert in this. But the question was basically, you know, does it make sense to invest in conferences, you know, a few conferences a year as a way to do some prospecting? The reason it's a tough decision sometimes is the cost involved. I mean, just travel alone can get very, very expensive. And, you know, it's something to certainly consider. So I wanted to go ahead and touch on that. So there was more to the question, a little bit more context, but it's really basically that. And Kelly's just curious, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is something I should consider. I don't do conferences right now. I think if you're going to do conferences, Kelly, it's important that you do it the right way. First of all, I think there's a mindset component here. Conferences aren't going to, I wouldn't suggest looking at conferences as a way to walk away with clients, okay? This is really more of a longer-term investment if you're going to do it. And if you go in with the expectation that you're going to get clients there, or really hot prospects, that's just going to make things worse. It's going to really, it's not going to help you get the most out of the event. You're not going to be at your best. So, it's really important to understand that this is a long-term thing. You need to understand and get clear on what you want to get out of the conference. And then use that to help you figure out which conference or conferences to attend. I would say, first of all, choose conferences that feel comfortable to you. So maybe create kind of a list of potential conferences first, and then you can shortlist and narrow it down to one or two at the most. The best conferences tend to be the ones that are obviously in your target market, okay? And I say obviously, but sometimes that's not obvious to people. You know, they go to really broad conferences that have huge attendance numbers, and that's not necessarily the best thing. So the more niched it is, the better. And not only that should it be in your target market, but you want to make sure that it's something that's geared toward your target prospect. So in other words, like a marketing director, so that they're going to be marketing people there who could potentially hire you at some point. Okay, so if it's going to be, you know, a bunch of tech people and nobody from marketing, then that's not necessarily the best option, because these people usually have no say in terms of, you know, hiring a writer, for example, or a designer. So make sure that, you know, these would be conferences that your particular contacts in an organization would attend. One easy way to know that is by looking at the session titles. I mean, just by looking at what they're covering, what they're going to be talking about, what the workshops and sessions are going to be about, you'll be able to quickly tell if that's going to be the case. The next thing I would say is any opportunities that you can, so this takes time, but look for opportunities to get involved. So not just be an attendant, but be somebody who is actually participating somehow in some aspect of the conference. So for instance, panel discussions are an easier way to get involved than to actually speak and lead a workshop or a session. Many times the organizers are looking for panelists or moderators, or, you know, worst case, somebody who could help keep time, somebody who could help set up or assist in some way. You'd be surprised, you know, how well that might be received, an offer to just help out kind of behind the scenes. So consider something like that. When you have a designated role in any kind of networking activity or event, especially if you're more the shy kind or introverted, it can really help you feel a little bit more confident, a little bit better about being there and be more effective. Before you go to a conference, one thing you should always do is reach out to vendors, speakers, other attendees. Those are typically easy to find. And then you want to continue that conversation and, of course, meet them there while you're at the event. One thing that I know a lot of, not a lot of people, but that can be very effective is while you're at the conference, tweet about it, share things that you're learning in social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, if it makes sense to share it there. Because you never know, first of all, how that somebody else who's not there might receive that. It might spark something in another prospect. And somebody at the conference who could be a prospect or a potential partner for you could be at the conference, might see it, and that might be a great way to start a conversation and meet up there in person. Again, don't pressure yourself to feel like you have to walk away with all these hot leads. You're not there to sell. You're there to start some conversations. In fact, that would be the one thing I would say. Look, just think about it as a way to start conversations. And then really just post-event, make sure to follow up with everybody. Again, keep that conversation going as best as you can. And don't just think in terms of potential clients. Think in terms of potential people you could stay in touch with colleagues, people such as other creatives, other marketing people. Such as marketing firms, advertising agencies, and PR firms, and so forth. Those are all great potential contacts. Take it upon yourself to start those conversations to keep them going and stay in touch in a value-added way. So there's a lot more to this, but I would say that in a nutshell is really kind of what's going to work. And again, if you think about it as an investment, a long-term strategy that's not there to necessarily yield clients right away, I think you're going to get a lot out of it over the long haul. So that's the only question that we had seen. And I want to, before we open it up, I want to bring Susan on the call. And let me unmute Susan. Hey, Susan, how's it going?
Hello there. How are we doing?
Doing well. Great to have you here. Wanted to introduce you to the group. I know we sent out an email a few weeks ago, but Susan has been working with me for, gosh, almost a year now.
Right.
Some of my coaching programs. I know it's been like it's flown by. Early spring, mid-spring of 2018. And so you're going to start seeing more and more Susan in the Platinum calls. She is – I'm going to let her – talk a little bit more about her background, but she's wonderful. I just love working with her. She's actually been through my coaching programs, so she knows my stuff really, really well. And I'm trying to really bring in more resources to help you guys. So, Susan, tell us a little bit about your business. Kind of a little bit of your professional background and so forth for those who may not know you.
Yeah, thanks. And thank you so much. It's really honestly an honor and a pleasure to be able to partner with you, Ed, and to support the folks that you have coming through your programs. It's been a really fun year for me to get to know people and really help. I feel like I'm really helping, and that's important. It's important for me, that's for sure. So hopefully I can make a difference for the folks in this program as well. But as far as my background, I have been writing my whole life and kind of avoiding it. And oftentimes I say that and people laugh. It's been chasing me. And so for years I did a lot of other things besides write. And just a handful of years ago, I finally said, Uncle, raise the white flag and I'm going to do this formally for business. And so as I've mentioned, I've owned a couple different kinds of businesses. I owned a couple franchises. I owned a retail shop. I started an organization for women business owners in my area back a couple years ago. I've done a lot of just really eclectic things and kind of had a short life. And this I've been doing now probably from next to business coaching, which is one of my franchises. This is probably the second longest thing I've done in terms of owning my own business and heading in this direction. So it's been a really incredible journey, but I love being able to it's funny because writing wasn't something I really thought about as a business necessarily until just a handful of years ago. And then Ed, I went through, you know, one of your programs along with AWAI and a couple of other writing programs that I know folks in this group are probably familiar with, and just kind of evolved and evolved and evolved. And I think that's what's so fascinating about writing and getting into business for yourself in this way is that, you know, if you looked at the business I started 5 years ago, it looks nothing like what I'm doing today. Really almost nothing. So it's such a big difference. And it's just been small pivots and changes and, ooh, let's go in this direction. Let's try this, all in and around writing, but just kind of building, like, you know what? I didn't like that. I don't think that's really, you know, where my skill set lies or where I'm best in terms of writing. I'm going to try and, you know, head in this new direction, you know, and really just constantly pivoting and fine tuning. And I think, that's been great experience for me. And I'm hoping that, like I said, some of that can benefit everybody in this group as well. Just kind of keeping an open mind to, well, let's try this and let's see how this works. So, but very excited to be here. So thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you. Great to have you, Susan. So yeah, like I said, guys, you're going to be seeing much more of Susan. And the cool thing is not only is she very familiar with, my material strategies and models, but then she also brings additional perspectives from her own, writing business. So that's, just more value for you guys. So guys, I want to open it up. I know there's not a lot of you on the call today. I know many of you catch the replay, but we have an open floor right now. So if you have any questions, just go ahead and let me know in the chat area. Just type in, you know, that you have a question. I can bring you in. We can have a conversation. If you'd rather just type it in, that's fine as well. But again, we have an open floor right now, and we can chat about whatever you got going on and give you advice, feedback, whatever you need help with.
And Ed, I wanted to, if I could, just make a quick comment going back to the question that you answered up front about events. Absolutely agree. And I, you know, it's interesting. That's another thing that's evolved for me over time is, you know, how I participated in events and how I looked at them. You know, my mindset towards events has kind of evolved over time. And recently I've had a couple of events that were pleasant surprises. There was one that was fairly local. I live a couple of hours outside of Boston and went into Boston. I said, no, it's only an afternoon. I'll take the afternoon. I'll go down. And I was lucky enough to be asked to be a moderator of a panel. You were talking about that. And that's exactly what I did. And I honestly didn't expect to honestly get much of anything out of it. It was a small group. It was, it was my target market, which is women professionals who want to write books. I help women write books. And I'm a ghostwriter and editor and all that good stuff. And so I really went and said, you know what, I'll meet some new contacts, maybe some new, expand my network a little bit and just see what happens. And yesterday I signed a client from who I met at that event. So never expected it. It's a nice little project. She's got a book she's already written. She wants me to edit and do developmental editing with her. So it's a great project, perfect for me. She's a wonderful client, but I wasn't expecting it. But I also went without expecting it. So in other words, like you were saying, to kind of speak to what you had said, is that I went to just see who can I meet? Are there some new people down in the Boston area that I can just expand my network? People there are coming there specifically to talk about writing books. So the target market was perfect in the sense of the subject matter. But oftentimes what I wanted to share with everybody is that I use it for my social media in a slightly different way. There's a couple different things that I'll do. One is I might attend an event kind of covertly, you know, and just go as an attendee, but then I take really great notes so that I can then write a couple of blog articles about it. I want to know and start to maybe shape myself as an expert. Like, geez, I attended the XYZ event and I heard the speaker and the speaker was saying this and I agree, or I would take that one step further. So I might write an article about a topic that was discussed at that event to help my social media effort. Number one, build my blog article library, you know. So you can go to events with a slightly different frame of mind and really have some fun with it. And so I do that. And I also I also put it in my social media rotation. So if I was the moderator for that one event, I made sure and put that in my Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and then I had it rotate. Hey, coming up, looking forward to this great event. hope you can join us, that kind of thing. So that it's just, again, something new and fresh in my social media rotation that gets in front of people that isn't the same old kind of thing, you know. So it's nice to say either I'm going or I'm participating in some way, and to cue that up a month or two in advance. And then even for a month or two after, say, hey, I had a great time at this event, met this person, that person, maybe put share a picture. Very cool. Lots of different ways you can use events to really help you well ahead of the event as well as long after, even if it's not directly landing a client.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's I love that. Just so many different ways, right, to leverage. I think the common thread here is being strategic and plan ahead.
Right.
You know, Kelly's question when she sent me the background, I mean, the event was like later on in January. That's just not a lot of time. If you can, you know, kind of start thinking 90 days ahead, or even longer, that, you know, that really, really helps. And of course, if you can also, one thing that also helps in terms of costs, if you can, you know, consider location. I'm in Atlanta, so to go to an event in Seattle, that's a lot of travel time and cost. So it really has to count. So it has to be something that's narrowly focused. Something, you know, maybe in the Southeast, especially if I can drive, or if it's here in Atlanta, that really kind of elevates it, just because I know that I could, you know, I can get a return on my investment a lot faster.
Yep.
So, good stuff. All right, guys, I don't see any questions. You guys are, I know I see Carrie here. Robin usually has something. So don't be shy. Of course, if you're just here to listen, that's fine as well. But we're here for you. So let us know how we can help. You know, I while we're waiting, there was a just got off a coaching call where we went kind of deep into this topic, Susan, of you know, can you or should you have more than one target market? And this is something that, I mean, there's been a long debate on that for a long time. And I think everything else being equal, you're better off with a single target market. But there's always an exception, right? And what we came, there's a couple of things that everyone walked away with. One is, if you have more than one, you will be better off if you find and identify and explain the common thread. So if it's, I think the, you know, forget the, which examples we were using, that came up. I think, one was, higher education, tourism agencies, and let me see, I got my notes right here. And the other one was, NGOs. Okay. So I challenged her. I said, okay, what's the common thread? You know, it's fine if you list them, all three. What's the common thread and why all these three? And what came out was, and she had some really good things that tie them together. Some of them were storytelling. She also has deep professional experience in each of them. Okay, so that's another thing you could use. What you don't want is to pick three just because they sound good or because these are all three growth areas. But you have really nothing in any of them or nothing in some of them, or you can't find a way to tie them together. The other thing is, you know, why three? You know, why do you feel the need? And she gave me some really strong reasons as to why. She's got really good traction in all three. But if you don't, then, you know, I would kind of lean more toward sticking with one or two. And then I also suggested, look, I would suggest doing an annual review on if you do more than one target market, and make sure that the assumptions are still accurate, that they still apply.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because you might find that, you know, you have one, it might make sense to expand, or you have three, it might make sense to narrow it down, or it might make sense to take one and then go micro, you know, with higher ed, for instance, get really specific because of the experience you've had in the past couple of years there. It might make sense to go a little bit narrower. So just, you know, there's no right or wrong here, but whichever way you go, you can't just say, oh, sure, that's fine. You have to do things to make it work, to make it work well on your situation.
Yeah. I think for me, Ed, when I think about having more than one target market, the first word that pops into my head is complexity, because it's hard enough for me to crank out one blog article a month that makes sense to, I can't imagine having to do that three a month or, you know, three a week or something, just to, and try and be on point, try and be, deliver value, try and, you know, and make it, because all the things we try and do if we're writing a blog for ourselves to position ourselves as an expert, to me, it's just, oh my gosh, I gotta, there just feels like a lot more moving parts to my marketing if I'm trying to market to more than one audience, because what's important to what resonates with one audience may or may not resonate with the other two. It might not make sense. So you're really almost tripling your workload in that case. That would be my only concern. Like, if you can make it work, go for it. But for me, it's about simplicity.
Yeah. And that's why I say, hey, stick, you know, really at the end of the day, I think the best advice is try to stick with one. Mm. And it's for that same reason you just gave. If you really kind of dilute your efforts. In her case, she had really good traction in each of them. Mm. And a lot of it was referrals and word of mouth. And then we talked about how, in terms of prospecting, which I always say, look, you shouldn't just depend 100% on referrals and word of mouth. But for prospecting, she was going to focus on one of them. So in terms of her outbound efforts. But yeah, I'm with you. Even then, it's a lot more work. So it's, and then here's the question that everyone should consider. Why? You know, so at the end of the day, why? Because if really when you dig deep, the real reason you're trying to do three is that you're trying to hedge your bets. That's right. Not a good reason.
Mm. Yep.
You know. All right, so Carrie just submitted a question. So I have a basic question. Do you recommend expecting long-term clients to conform to your procedures or tools, or do you conform to theirs? For example, which clients would use Slack versus email? Ah, interesting, yeah. Hey, let me bring you in. Hey, Carrie, how are you? I'm not sure if you got mic. Hello, can you there? She may not have her mic on. Okay. I just tried unmuting you again. So, all right. Can you say something?
Oh, hold on one sec.
Okay.
Hold on. I was with my children, and they're sitting in the family room. So I'm sorry. Okay. So am I off?
That's
all right.
Sorry to put you on the
gosh,
spot.
I had to get up out of the easy chair and like sprint in here. Okay, I'm here. So
yeah,
this is
no,
what
no
I'm
worries.
Talking about. I have a client in particular. I'm just going to use this guy as an example. And he pays me a pretty nice amount every month to do some blogging and other miscellaneous marketing. The emails are killing me. But it's not just him. I mean, there's lots of people that it's just these people are – I'm talking typically about – people who are maybe like in the last 10 or 15 years of their career. And so email is what they know. And it just drives me bananas because then I have to go and hunt for stuff in my email. I hate email. I think it's it's just ridiculous. And I wish that I could move everybody to like Slack or something like that so that all of these communications would be in one place. You know, I have trained this guy now, for example, to put files into like Dropbox. So then everything is in one place and I don't have to search email. But I just have such a hard time getting clients. I mean, I have this as part of my intake, right? Where as soon as somebody, you know, signs up with me, we're going to have an engagement, I send them a form, like an intake form. And, it explains some of this about how, you know, how we're going to communicate. People throw that right out the door and it's right back to email. And I just wish I could train people to stop with the emailing because email is not a filing cabinet. And when you have like such a pile of clients that you have to, you know, and unfortunately I have two email addresses because I have two sides of my business. So if I can't find it in one email, then I got to go find it in the other email. Oh my gosh. Like it's driving me bananas. So is this just part of the job or is there a way that I can get people to really agree to use a better format of communication than email?
Yeah, it's a great question. Here's what I would say, and I want to also bring in Susan so she could, talk about her experience with this, but I think it's going to be overall, it's going to be difficult to insist on one specific platform for all your clients. So for instance, say, this is the way I work. I use Slack, or Basecamp or whatever. And, this is how I expect to communicate with you. And if you can't, then sorry, we can't work together. Can that work? Yeah. I mean, eventually, if you feel really strongly about that, you can create a business around that requirement. I think it's a little rigid. And what I prefer is to do kind of what you do and set the expectation from the start. And at a minimum, insist that the client, have run all their communications and feedback and requests through one person. So that is a simpler thing to request and a much more realistic requirement, I feel, at least at first, than to require every client from now on, existing and new, to communicate with you on a specific platform. So if you can channel it all through one, that takes so much of the complexity out, because now you're talking about, okay, so here's our consolidated feedback, and then they become the owner of taking care of that. And, I think it's just a matter of explaining, look, I can't do great work for you when I'm getting hit from all different angles and all these different people with different requests and feedback and, messages. And I just can't. They're going to fall through the cracks. So the way I work is you assign a person who's going to be the designated, communicator, the project lead or whatever, and everything runs through that person. And that way it's all consolidated on your end. I think that's a much more realistic approach. But Susan, thoughts on that? I think we're trying to hear. You can go ahead and unmute yourself. There you go.
I hear you. Both pushing buttons here at the same time. I agree, Ed. Unfortunately, Carrie, there's, I've had clients too where they just, I had a client that just couldn't get, I do a lot of things on Google Docs because we're usually working with the work that I do, we're working off of one document, whether it's an article, for a blog or a manuscript or whatever. And I had one client who just, it was a nightmare because she just kept creating she'd cut everything that she wrote and pasted into a new article, into a new document on Google Docs every time. Okay, it's ready. And I'm like, well, you didn't do anything. Oh, here's the, and she kept just creating new, more and more every time she made a change. It was hard because I couldn't really teach her and I didn't want to insult her. It wasn't her thing. She wasn't into it. And I didn't have a lot of options there. But I agree with that. Like if you're dealing with a bigger team and you've got 15 people emailing you, that's a total nightmare versus having all of them, have that roll up to one person and have one person be the project lead for everything. Like all your questions come to that one person and then one person emails you once or, multiple times, but at least it's all kind of more centralized. But yeah, sometimes technology is something that people just, if it's a new tool they have to use, and learn, that's, I think, the hurdle. It's like, oh, I've never heard of Slack. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have time to learn something new. That's probably the bigger issue. It's not because of you it's not because of the process that you're trying to follow. You're trying to do the right thing and be professional and be organized. I think most of the time when I've gotten pushback, like from this woman, she was like, what is it again? It's Google Docs. Now that's been around for a long time. I didn't think it would be that big a deal. It was a very big deal. So sometimes you kind of have to just step back and say, okay, let's figure out a better way. What's the best way? If you're more comfortable with Dropbox or some other technology, it's just, I don't think there's a really great answer for this, honestly. This is a tough one. Some people are more technically savvy. Some people, have more exposure to different kinds of technology. Not everyone is the same. Hopefully it'll be less than more. I would think, Carrie, that you'd be seeing less of this as time goes on. because everyone's working remotely these days, you know, from virtual office, that kind of thing. It's just more common. So I would hope you'd see more as time goes on. Maybe it's the industry she's in, and maybe it's got something to do with the industry just being a little not as tech savvy. Some industries are more so than others, right? So maybe it's just based on the vertical she's working in.
Well, I think also, not only setting the expectation from the very beginning in terms of the feedback, but also in terms of getting as much of the buy-in and agreement early on and what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
Yep.
So in other words, like what I do with white papers, this is a good example because white papers are complex projects. For years, I would deal with one person and, you know, I would make kind of get an agreement on what we're going to do, and then I would submit a draft, and then you know, she would have her comments and then she would pass it around the office, and suddenly all these people are commenting and doing what you said, Carrie, like email me directly. And I'm not sure like whose feedback to consolidate. So that's the feedback piece we talked about. But what I learned is to upfront do the, get the buy-in at first. So in other words, all right, make sure we have everyone on the planning or kickoff meeting who's going to have an opinion. You know, let's get them on board. And if that's not possible, then create some kind of intermediary step where you say, okay, so here's what we're going to do. Can you please run it through the team and make sure that, you know, you consolidate all the feedback. And before you get to drafting, then you get all that feedback and, you know, can make any adjustments you need to make before you draft.
Sure.
And then same thing on the feedback, right? So once the feedback, you send it in, now it's an issue of, all right, you need to consolidate all the feedback and all the comments and edits. So anyway, I don't know, Carrie, does that help?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, in this particular instance, they agreed to it in the beginning and then it just like went right out the window. And so, what I really probably should have done was just, you know, kept kind of nudging them back to the tool that we agreed to, like, great idea, would you mind sticking that on Slack so that we have it in our common place or something like that. And I just sort of let it go because I thought, well, you know, I have a little cautionary tale that I could share that you might find, that somebody listening might find interesting if you want to hear it.
Sure. Yeah.
So I had a client where we had an agreement. I wrote a proposal. We had a phone call, walked him through the proposal. It was for a project that where I would be on retainer, and I had the whole thing mapped out, what I was going to do every month, and the list, and here's how you find the list. Actually, the list was on a, you know, Google Docs spreadsheet because I thought that this is what this team, you know, was already using, so this would be comfortable. Did the work in the first month, sent the bill, and the guy called me and said, I'm in shock, my jaw's on the floor. How could you bill me this much money? I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, I would never have agreed to this price. Mm-hmm. And I directed him back to the spreadsheet where the price was right there, and he said, I've never seen the spreadsheet before. I have no idea what this is. I said, don't you remember when we last month had that hour-long phone call with, you know, our other team member, and we talked this whole thing through? Nope, he'd never seen it before. He said, if I had seen this price, I would have shut it down right there. Where, I mean, that's not at all how the original conversation went. But, you know, I thought like, here, I have this verbal agreement. I've already been doing work for this person. We're just nudging up the level of the work. I mean, it was just a big upsell. And, you know, when he got the bill, he couldn't remember anything about it. And so the reason I share the story is get a contract. Always, always. Even if a customer that you've been doing business with for a while, even when you have that verbal, even if there's an email. I mean, he in email agreed. And, you know, I forwarded him the email, just said, this is just to refresh your memory. But once somebody's angry at you, what are you going to do, right? So always, always, always get that contract.
That is, yeah, couldn't agree more. Get it, and you're right. It, you know, worst case scenario, if it's a long-term client, I would at least put it in writing in an email and say, okay, this is what we're doing. Can you just reply, you know, confirming?
Yeah. Okay, so I had done that, and I should have made him print out the piece of paper, sign the piece of paper, and scan it in and send it back to me is what I should.
That's always best. That's always best, exactly. But at a minimum, you know, don't have a paper trail, right? An audit trail. So if there's ever a problem, he can always say no. Because what is he going to say? You know, well, I didn't open the attachment.
Well, in the conversation, he had said, my budget for this is about $50,000 in the course of a year. And I said,
oh, did we lose Carrie?
For me, this is, you know, this is a huge thing, right? Uh-huh. That his budget is 50 grand over a year. Oh my gosh, the angels are singing. Here we go. And, you know, so I send this thing with this number that for this particular month started with a 5. And he's like, oh, absolutely not. My budget is $1,500. What happened to the $50,000 a year? I never said that. Okay. So
yeah,
there you go. I mean, so it was a, you know, it felt like such a huge win at the time. And when he replied to the email, like, everything's a go. Okay. I mean, he had no answer for that later. He said, I don't remember what I could have possibly been thinking. I didn't understand that that was how much money you were talking about every month. And he denied ever saying $50,000 a month. I mean, good client. We fixed the problem, spun it back. I'm back to $1,500 a month with the guy. Fine. I mean, you know, it's fine. It's just, you know, I wanted to tell the story because even when you feel comfortable with somebody you've worked with for a long time, gotta be careful.
Absolutely. Get it in writing. Get it in writing. And I say, look, it's really not so much for legal reasons as it is, because it's rare that it goes to, you know, to that extent. It's really more as you have something to point to, right? That they agreed and they signed. Mm-hmm. And that really mm-hmm. kind of shuts them up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never agreed. What do you mean? But you signed it. It's right here in black and white. So, yeah. Well, thank you. Those are painful lessons, but they're good lessons because, like, you don't have to learn them all over again.
Oh my gosh! Well, you know, it's over now, and you know, he paid the bill. He just said, "I can never do this again." So yeah. I don't know. You know, you don't know in the moment what somebody is thinking or if they thought they had approval. I suspect he thought, I can spend this much money. And then in later conversations, perhaps he was, maybe they like reeled him in a little bit. And then he had to, how do you save face and go back and say, I can't, you know, I can't do this.
But yeah.
He's going to say, I don't remember saying, I mean, and I'm not calling him a liar. I'm just saying, you don't always know what happens behind the scenes either. So yeah.
Well, good. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's a cautionary tale for everybody. And, That's great advice. Thank you. Okay. I don't see any other questions. I'm going to do one last call, just in case. If you guys have anything that you want to discuss, need feedback on, or it's a question. Happy to, oh, here we go. Robin, let me bring you in. Hey, Robin. Let me unmute you.
Hi,
Ed. Hold on. Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. And you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm here. I was muted. Sorry. Hi, Robin. Thank you.
All right. So I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them, the first one, and I'm not sure how we go about it, but the first one is LinkedIn. I've noticed now with LinkedIn, if you're looking at like the different jobs that they have out there, it will now comes up and tells you that you have, you know, certain requirements that they're looking for.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that. So I'm not sure. So there's specific keywords.
Are you talking about like traditional full-time job postings?
No, some of them are contract.
Okay.
But they, for the most part, they're full-time, but there are some contract ones in there, which are the ones that I normally look at. Oops, where'd you go? Okay. So it has a list on this the right-hand side of all these different keywords that they're looking for. And a lot of times when I see those, that list of keywords, it says that I have like maybe 2 out of 6 or 7 or 8 of them. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I actually have all of them. They're just not in my LinkedIn profile. And everyone has different keywords. So, I mean, I could be spending my life putting all these keywords out there.
Mm-hmm.
So what, just looking for recommendations on how to approach these people, like in a warm email, I know to get them, send them an email to, and then try to get them off of LinkedIn to a conversation.
Yeah. So Susan, I know you do a lot with LinkedIn. Any thoughts there? Because I know that, I don't know if you're talking about tags. Are you referring to tags, you know, like if somebody has endorsed me for, I don't know, direct marketing or digital marketing?
No.
You're talking about keywords in your profile.
Yeah, these look like they would be keywords in the profile.
Somewhere in the profile. Yep, I know what you mean, Robin. I know what you're referring to. So sometimes you'll look at, if you're out there poking around on LinkedIn at jobs, it'll tell you, it'll present jobs to you based on the keywords it finds in your profile. It says you're a 30% match for this, or you're a 75% match. You'd be in the top 75% of applicants if you applied for this job. So what LinkedIn is doing is that's exactly what it's doing. You're absolutely right, Robin. It's looking for keyword matches, but you have to keep in mind that it is, it has its limits. So in other words, LinkedIn is literally looking for black and white keywords. Even though you look at it and you say, oh my gosh, I'm qualified to do all of that. I have, you know, 100% of their requirements. LinkedIn may or may not see that. I wouldn't put a ton of weight on those numbers. That's just to entice you. That's just, see, there, it's literally playing a matching game and looking at your profile and the job posting and saying, oh, look at that. There's seven matches there. You know, that puts you in this category. It's really that simple. If you see a posting out there that you know you're a dead ringer for, go for it. And don't worry about that. I just, you know, I used to do that all the time. It's just, I'm applying for stuff because I know I'm the right fit. Oftentimes I will look to see if I can reach out to the poster, the person that actually posted it, and see if I can connect with them. That's a, you know, even if it's an HR person, I'll reach out and say, hey, I want to connect with you, but I saw the job posting and love to connect with you. So I wouldn't put a whole ton of weight on those statistics because it really is just it's a numbers thing. They're just matching anything. If you're one letter off, you know, let's say they're looking for plural and you put singular, it might miss or something like that. It might not count it. So, I mean, I wouldn't put a ton of weight on those. That's just there to make LinkedIn look more robust, which it is amazingly robust, but it just makes it look like, wow, we're, you know, the great and powerful Oz over here. So it's their attempt to look useful, super useful. Does that make sense? I mean, does that help you? Does that clarify things a little? It does.
I know though that some of the recruiters, if you don't have all those specifics on the profile, they won't even talk to you from past experience.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So there's, even though you have them and they're in your resume, but they're not.
So one thing that I work with, both of my kids are just out of college. My daughter's a senior and I've been working with her and I've just been talking about what I usually advise is that if there's a job you're looking for and you really think that you're a great fit, grab a couple of the keywords and stick them into your profile. Even if it's for temporary, just to make you match. And I know it's kind of cheating the system, but the thing of it is recruiters too. I did recruiting for a while. Actually did that for a bit. And so they use systems that are doing this great magic matching machine, right? So it's this machine that literally someone puts their resume in, the machine says, yes, no, 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 out. The next one comes in, yes, yes, no, yes, no, 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 out. You know, so it literally won't even show you the resumes that might be close. It only shows you like 80% and above of matching. So, but it's a machine and it's not smart enough to know, well, maybe they just are talking about a little differently or whatever. So keywords are a bit of a, I guess there's a real trick to them, and I certainly would never pretend to be an expert, but I think that it's just a matter of saying, okay, if I really want to be considered for this job, I'm going to add a few more of those keywords that they've put in the job description to make sure that my resume gets bumped up in their system.
Yeah, years ago I worked for Lotus as a temp, and I was doing admin work for them, and they had an opening in the QA department, and I wanted to transfer over there because my contract was coming up was, you know, going to be ending. And so I gave my resume to my manager at the time, because she was also the manager for the QA department. And it said, you know, they weren't really using QA back then. And so it was, my resume said design, developed, and tested, and blah, 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 all this stuff. And she came back and threw my resume at me. And she said, I don't see the letters QA anywhere on here. So you're qualified. I said, what does tested mean?
Yeah.
You know, so I had to go put QA in front of everything and hand it back to her. And then she let me have the job.
Oh, my good heavens. How silly.
I agree.
It's crazy, isn't it?
So, all right. So thank you. So my other question is, I'm getting this strong pull to teach writing classes, both online and in-house, for engineers and managers. And I've been talking, when I go to the different conferences, I've actually been talking to different managers that would be the hiring managers for these conference, for these classes. And they really like the idea. So what would you recommend for steps or for software to create these online courses, how to go? Because it's still all pretty new to me, and I've put the outlines together, but I need to do the rest.
So are you, were you specifically talking about making these online classes, or is there any discussion about you coming in and doing an on-site workshop?
Both.
Okay. And I only ask because I know that a lot of companies are going to find the on-site workshop more attractive.
Right.
So, you know, that's good that you're willing to offer both. In terms of software, I mean, you could get really fancy here. I'm a big believer in just keeping it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So I use, are you thinking, by the way, direct to camera or slides or a combination?
I want it to be as interactive as possible. So no real PowerPoints or anything. It's all talking and interaction through the whole thing.
Okay, so are these, are going to be live, just online, but live?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, in that case, and that's a great format. In that case, I mean, what we're using right now, Loom, is a wonderful platform for this. So it's really a matter of just opening up a Loom account. And, you know, there's different levels. But, using Loom. Now, I know you say, hey, no PowerPoint slides. I still do recommend having a few slides ready, and using them when you need to illustrate something. So number one, like key points or before and after or something like that. Mm-hmm. That gets really tricky to do if you don't have, if you're not able to show it, you know?
Right.
So, you know where those points are, where you're going to have to show that. And, if you can, this is something I started using a few months ago, is, an iPad. Do you have a tablet now? It doesn't have to be an iPad.
Yes. My son actually just gave me one for a Hanukkah present.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So I use an app called, what's it called? I use it all the time and I just don't even like pay attention to the name of it. You think it would tell you. Notability. Notability, super easy to use, and you're going to need to buy a pen. You know, there's all kinds of options. I have an iPad. I just went with the Apple Pen. Just because I knew that would be like, you know, no problems with compatibility, but you know, you can use other pens with an iPad. In that way you can, you know, if you like to illustrate things, you know, on the fly,
mm-hmm.
that's a great tool. Also, if you end up creating worksheets that you walk them through and you want to go ahead and use an example, then you can fill out the worksheet there in front of them as you're coming up with the example. As opposed to slides, slides are static and they're going to have to be pre-created, right? So then you have three options at that point. You have the, if you want to make it interactive, you have the talking head, You have slides to go ahead and illustrate key points, before and afters, you know, diagrams, whatever. And then you have the iPad where you can go ahead and sketch things out on the fly, fill out worksheets, you know, et cetera. And Zoom makes it really easy to go back and forth.
Right. Okay. In fact, I do have a Zoom account already, so.
Perfect. Yeah. Let me show you real quick so you can kind of see. I'm going to share. And yeah, you can do desktop, whiteboard. You could do an app, and I'm going to share iPhone or iPad. And here's Notability. And what I do is I have a kind of a generic, like a master document. What I do is I do duplicate, and then I go, I need to clean this up. But it creates a new one, and, you know, I could just
I called the city.
Example one. And then you can, or you can sketch this out, you know, like I was doing this on a
Yeah, like when we did call. This together, right?
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes just a lot easier to illustrate. Here we were talking about these three different target markets, you know, and this can really help. If you have all three of these, it's going to make it give you a lot of options, and it's going to make the class way more interactive than just having one. Two is better. Three is, of course, optimal. And, you know, I would go ahead and just record these two. It'd be great if you end up doing one of these to get permission to record it. Because, you know, this could be something you could package and do as a, you know, self-study too as an option. If you ever wanted to do that, you know, maybe right. Not the first one. You got to get in, you know, in the hang of it first, but just something to think about.
Yes, I have thought about that as well, and then also thought about adding a coaching session at the end of it.
I think it's great. So. Yeah. Love it. Love it. And it sounds like, I hear the kind of the excitement there. Like you sound to be genuinely interested in doing something like that.
Yeah, I do. I actually gave up on trying to do marketing content.
Uh-huh.
And doing the marketing and the PR, especially after the last two disaster people that I've tried to do contracts with. I realized it's not something that I want to do. So
the cool thing about doing workshops is that, as you know, companies tend to have budgets for these things.
Right.
And these are things that they're used to buying and have money set aside for. Mm-hmm. And they place value in especially topics like these. They're investing in their people. You know, writing is a huge problem, as you know. There's an article that came out recently. You could do a Google search for it. Google something like what poor writing costs American companies, something like that. And where I saw it was in Medium. It might be in other places too, but anyway. Man, there's so much great stuff there. Not that you necessarily need to sell the idea, but, you know, if you're talking with a prospect and that they're maybe a little bit on the fence in terms of you know, when to do this, there's some great stuff in there. And you know who does this, does a lot of this, actually. Do you know Steve Slonway?
Yes.
So he does a lot of this in corporations. A lot of writing workshops for non-writers.
Yeah, because I have the background in the computers, the programming, database development, and all the technical writing, I'm actually focusing my workshops on engineers because
I love it.
Now with the agile software, they're required to do the documentation instead of bringing in a technical writer, and they have no clue. And even with my background, Microsoft changed the way we do proof proofreading and stuff on Microsoft Word on their newest version. And I don't understand what it is that they're trying to do, or even I had to go back. I had a deadline for an article I had to write. And so I had went back and got my old laptop and pulled that up and put my document on, retyped my document on there so that I could edit it, because I couldn't figure out the readability and all that other stuff with the new version of Word's editing stuff. And I went out to Microsoft's videos and their help, and I still couldn't understand what they were telling me.
Wow.
And I have a background in this stuff.
Yeah.
Totally confirmed that these are the right classes to do, and they're the right
time. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I love that you're focusing on an audience that you understand, you know, mm-hmm. and you know these guys well, and you're part of them, and this is, right. I think that's brilliant.
So, even, like I said, even at the conferences that I've been going to, and I go to the two different conferences for two different audiences, they're still, or two different niches, they're still my target audience, and I'm focusing still on the technical side and the software side of those conferences. So those are the people that I've been talking to.
Great. Here we go, conferences.
Yep.
Love it.
Yeah, I actually just got a magazine deal. I just wrote an article for a magazine that is actually one of the big conferences that is responsible for the
covering the conference?
No, I had gone to the conference specifically to interview a couple different companies there for one specific subject. And while I was there, I got to meet the editor of the main magazine that actually hosts the conference. And I told the editor about the interviews I was doing, and he told me to contact his associate editor. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I sent him an email, and within an hour, he actually called me on the phone and asked me to write for a specific audience. And so I did. I sent it to him. And yesterday they sent me an email and wanted my social security number and my address so that they could send me a check.
Like, yes. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Congrats.
I wasn't sure I was getting paid for it, but it was, but I was willing to do it anyways, because having my name in that magazine definitely would elevate me in the eyes of these guys that I've been talking to.
Sure.
4 or 5 years. Yeah.
But if you're getting paid, even better.
Right. Right.
Wonderful. Well, good stuff. Well, keep us posted on the workshops.
Okay.
Okay. And that's exciting. I'm happy for you. I can sense that this may be a great path for you, Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm feeling much better about all of it. Good. It's all about the mindset, right, Ed?
There you go. It starts with that.
It's just a matter of getting it straight.
There you go. Recalibrating.
Right. Okay.
Good stuff. All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Great discussions today. Susan, again, thanks for being here. And we will get this replay posted tomorrow. Susan, any parting thoughts before we leave?
No, I definitely good conversation today about, having clients using tools and whether or not to go to events and all that stuff. It's some good conversation. So hopefully people have a chance to listen to the replay. It's good stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, you guys all have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk again next month. Take care, everybody.